Women's Cancer Pavilion specializes in the treatment of breast and gynecologic cancers. Working together with Mary Bird Perkins and Our Lady of the Lake Health and the region's leading providers to deliver the best possible outcome is at the heart of everything we do. From innovative surgical techniques to the most advanced treatment options, we don't stop until we've examined every possibility and answered every question. Because walking with women through every step of their cancer journey is what we do all day, every day at Women's Cancer Pavilion.
Everyone deserves to be connected. That's why Cox offers a range of high-speed internet plans that fit any budget. Stream, chat, and stay connected at an incredible price. It's fast, reliable internet for everyone. You're probably thinking, wait, what? But yeah, it's true. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Casey Vallier. Casey is the coordinator of radio production and in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. We recap the Colts game against the Denver Broncos, discuss the Colts offense and defense. We also discuss quarterback Matt Ryan, head coach Frank Reich, the Colts' next game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and more. Casey is coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
Everyone deserves to feel connected. That's why Cox has high-speed internet to fit any budget. For real. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply. Everyone deserves to be connected. That's why Cox offers a range of high-speed internet plans that fit any budget. Stream, chat, and stay connected at an incredible price. It's fast, reliable internet for everyone. You're probably thinking, wait, what? But yeah, it's true. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply. Everyone deserves to feel connected. That's why Cox has high-speed internet to fit any budget. For real. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
The it's always the right time deal.
Hey, want to go to Mickey D's for lunch?
Ooh, let's go now.
But it's not lunchtime yet.
If we're going to McDonald's, it's always the right time.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that.
There's a deal for every lunch hour at McDonald's.
Now, get a hot and spicy McChicken, double cheeseburger, or six-piece chicken McNuggets with small fries for only $3. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Everyone deserves to feel connected. That's why Cox has high-speed internet to fit any budget. For real. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply.
Play action. Time. Wide open. Inside the 30 goes Jerry Jeudy. Gilmore's on Sutton this time. Keep it on the ground and getting spilled.
Over a lot of people thought he should roll out.
Yeah.
You know what happened. Fourth and one. Surveys, good protection, slides, fires, broken up in the end zone. Gilmore on Sutton. So the defensive player of the year a couple of years back, and somehow, someway, the Indianapolis Colts, who took their first lead of the game on that field goal, pull out a 12-9 victory.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio is courtesy of Amazon Prime's Thursday Night Football coverage with Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on the call. That was from the Thursday Night Football game between the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos from October the 6th of 2022. And, of course, quarterback for the Denver Broncos, Russell Wilson, had his pass batted down by Colts defensive back Stephon Gilmore, giving the Colts a 12-9 victory in overtime. To talk more about that game, we want to welcome him to the program. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network, Casey Vallier. Casey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Thursday night football between the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos. There were a lot of one-word answers to describe this game. I'll leave it up to you, Casey. Give me your takeaways from the Colts-Broncos game.
Well, since I'm an employee of the Colts, I'll say a win is a win, right? But there was a lot that went into it. You know, it's funny when you look back and you see all the statistics and everything from it. I mean, it was everything that everybody thought it was. It was a pretty ugly football game. But within that, there were a handful of bright spots. I thought the Colts defense looked pretty well. Kicker Chase McLaughlin, who the Colts signed in week two, he looked really well. But still concerns about the Colts offense for sure. They've struggled through 5 weeks. They haven't scored over 20 points. So there's a handful of negative stuff that you want to improve on. But at the end of the day, in the game of football, when they look back at the schedule and what the record looks like, a win is a win.
Absolutely. And you said it, a win is a win, and the Colts will take it any way they can get it. And let's talk more about this game for a moment. I want to talk about Philip Lindsay. Philip, of course, we know about Philip beginning his career with the Denver Broncos, had a short stint with the Houston Texans, and Philip wanted to show off his skills coming back home to Denver. He had 11 carries for 40 yards, and he also had 3 catches for 14 yards. Just give me your thoughts on Philip's play against his former team, the Broncos.
No, I think that's a great point. I thought, you know, there was a lot of, you know, going into the game without Jonathan Taylor, and then Nyheim Hines gets hurt in that opening series for the Colts offense. You know, there's going to be some guys that need to step up. But Philip Lindsay was a guy that throughout all of training camp, I would say if you ask the majority of the people in the Indianapolis contingent, they were a little surprised at the fact that he didn't make that initial 53-man roster. In large part, I think it was because you knew you had Jonathan Taylor at the 1, Nyheim Hines at the 2, and just as far as, you know, carry load was going to be, Philip Lindsay just wasn't going to get any, because if you look at who the Colts' third running back is on their active roster, currently it's Deion Jackson, and prior to Thursday's game, he had just 1 carry through the first 5 weeks. So I think that was in large part what we were expecting, on the reason that we didn't see Philip Lindsay make that initial roster. But he's a guy who was a hard runner. He was, you know, one of the bright spots I thought throughout of all of training camp. So we weren't at all, I'm not necessarily say I was surprised at the way that he played, but talking to him leading up to it, I mean, Denver is home. That's where his wife and his kids live still. So he was able to have, you know, a lot of his family out there. And I think there was probably a little added emotion about playing a team that essentially said, hey, we're going to move on. And I think that was, you know, maybe a chip on his shoulder. We look at all these NFL players, it seems like they always are looking for additional chips to put on their shoulder. And that was definitely just one more additional for Philip Lindsay. And I think it was great for him just to show that all the hard work and dedication you put in, it's tough in the game right now for running backs because everybody claims them, you know, they're a dime a dozen. So a guy like Philip Lindsay, he's only in his 5th year in the NFL, and he already finds himself on a practice squad. But he showed that when his name is called, he is capable to go out there and be a very productive back. I thought he ran really, really hard. One of the things that, you know, you never put in question was how hard and the effort he was going to put forth. And I think we definitely saw that on Thursday. And it's a lot of, you know, for Colts fans, it was definitely a positive when you looked at it, because you go into the game without Jonathan Taylor, you expect not a very big running performance. And the team was actually able to rush over 100 yards, just a second time this year. They've done it in a very stagnant rush offense to this point. So there definitely was a bright spot with Philip Lindsay for sure.
Indeed, and let's stay with the bright spot. And you mentioned his name in the running attack, Deion Jackson. He had 13 carries for 62 yards. Just give me your thoughts on Deion and his play in this game.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he's one of the guys that we all, throughout the last, you know, year and a half, if you take what we saw last year in preseason and in training camp and then what we saw this year, it's a guy that has definitely made a lot of strides. He looked really, really good last year, you know, a rookie out of Duke, undrafted guy, kind of had a lot to prove. And he made a lot of strides last year, and then all throughout this year, he was a guy that, I mean, he made that initial 53-man roster because there were a lot of things that he did so well, you didn't want to risk somebody else going out and getting him. And I think on Thursday, that's what you saw. You saw the ability that in a pinch, you can turn to this guy, and he's got a lot of very similarities to Jonathan Taylor, who is the bell cow for the Colts. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, that's pretty high shoes to fill with Jonathan Taylor, you know, the reigning rushing champ. But there's a lot of similarities in the game between Deion Jackson and Jonathan Taylor, and I think you saw that on display. He was a man, he found as many holes as he could find and was able to carve out a very, very productive game on Thursday. And now for the Colts, it's going to be interesting to kind of see what they do moving forward, because when you put that on tape, it kind of goes, hey, you know, maybe if we need to give Jonathan Taylor a splash, we're pretty comfortable with a guy like Deion Jackson in the backfield.
All right, I want to move along now to the receiving side of the ball. And we had Alec Pierce was the leading receiver for the Colts, 8 catches for 81 yards. Give me your thoughts on Alec and his play in this contest.
Yeah, no, I think Alec continues to make big strides. There were, you know, a lot of expectations, very lofty expectations for him. You come into the year with Michael Pittman as the clear-cut number one, and then you take a guy in the second round, you just assume he can slide in and be, you know, a pretty predominant feature in the offense. And in week one, he was held catchless, suffered a concussion, so he missed week two. So you kind of head into week three with the guy in the second round who's yet to catch a pass. Everybody's kind of like, oh, what do you have in this? And he's really made a really good stride the last couple weeks. And I think last week you really saw the evolution between the relationship between he and Matt Ryan, which is going to be so key moving forward. Because for quarterbacks, especially right now what the Colts are dealing with, which is, you know, kind of uncharted waters, they've had an offensive line that's typically near the top of the NFL, and this year it's struggled. So Matt Ryan's having to get rid of the football a little faster than what he probably wants to, and having an extra security blanket in a guy like Alec Pierce is so vital. I mean, he had 8 catches on Thursday, which is it's just the 4th rookie in franchise history to have 8 receptions in a Colts uniform. So very impressive day on last Thursday, and I'm just anticipating to see the continual growth of Alec Pierce. And, you know, if Michael Pittman continues to be the number one, Alec Pierce being his sidekick, that can be a really good duo moving forward through the rest of 2022 for sure.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about the continued growth of Alec Pierce. We're seeing the continued growth of Michael Pittman Jr. Of course, he comes from NFL royalty where his dad was a running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where Jr. handled his business in the Broncos game on last Thursday night with 5 catches for 59 yards. Give me your thoughts on Michael and his play in this game.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that he's just so steady. You just know what you have, and, you know, he may not be, when you look at, you know, NFL receivers around the league that are your clear-cut number ones, your Justin Jeffersons, your Jamar Chases, your Cooper Cups, these guys that, you know, you look at their stat line, it's, you know, 10 catches for 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. Michael Pittman might have a couple games like that, but one of the things I think that is so pivotal to his growth within this offense is he knows what he's needed to do. He doesn't try to do too much, and he really is a guy that if you look at the amount of first downs, that's where I kind of draw my, you know, how well is Michael Pittman playing, is how many times he's making first downs. Not necessarily, you know, the big plays, but, you know, 3rd and 7, if you can get 9 yards, it's so key to keep drives alive, and it gives you multiple options, and that is what Michael Pittman has done. And he, I mean, on Thursday, I'm sure you look at that stat line and it's not flashy, but if you look at the times that those catches came, they were in pivotal moments that set up the Colts to continue their drives in order to get that 12-9 victory. And that's what Michael Pittman has been all year. And that's kind of, I think, what this Colts offense is kind of viewing Michael Pittman, you know, for the next handful of years for sure inside this offense.
Rightfully so. I want to move along now to the other side of the ball. We'll get back to the offense in just a moment, but let's get to the defensive side of the ball. The leading tackler in this game against the Broncos for the Colts was Bobby Okereke. He was the leading tackler with 6 tackles. Give me your thoughts on Bobby and his play in this game.
Bobby has been. He is very similar to the way that Michael Pittman is. He is just steady. And I know that sounds very cliche and all that, but that's one of the things that you put Bobby out there and you don't worry, because Bobby knows where he needs to be. He's got the athletic traits to put him in situations that maybe not all linebackers can be in. And Bobby is just one of those guys that every time his number is called, you look at him. The thing that I love about Bobby is you don't ever see any missed tackles. Now, here I am knocking on wood, hoping that that doesn't, you know, bite me, but Bobby Okereke is just as sure of a tackler as this team has. And then his counterpart, a guy who's, you know, currently tied for the league lead in tackles, in Zaire Franklin, who's kind of stepping in for Shaquille Leonard. Both of those guys have just been so steady, and you don't worry about the linebacking play, which is such a key spot in that defense, because, I mean, you're one of the generals. You're out there, you're calling plays, you're doing all of this. And to know that you don't have to worry, you got that security blanket of these guys are going to be where they need to be every moment they need to be. They aren't going to miss tackles in the open field. They're going to be able to stop a guy from getting, you know, an extra 5 or 6 yards to get a first down. They're there to knock that down. And that's one of the things that we've seen definitely out of Bobby over the last couple of years with him. And then this year with Zaire Franklin, he has taken a huge step in his growth.
All right. I want to talk now about a couple of players that made big strides on the defensive side. Zaire Franklin, Isaiah Rogers, and Kenny Moore II. They all had 5 tackles in this game. Give me your thoughts on their performance against the Broncos.
Yeah, no. I mean, you're hitting the nail right on the head. There's been a handful of guys that have made key plays in key moments. And you look at the play that Isaiah Rogers, he's the guy that, you know, the first couple weeks had 0 defensive snaps. It was almost that Brandon Faison had won the 3rd cornerback job inside this new Gus Bradley defense. And Isaiah Rogers is a very good returner as a kick returner. So he was mainly special teams, but he started to see his game inserted a little bit more. And I think one of the key things that kind of made his growth continue to grow, we saw last week in the game against Tennessee, he was able to stop Derrick Henry from getting to the corner on the outside and eliminate him from, you know, making a big gain. And it was one of those things that in the open field to tackle Derrick Henry, there's something about Isaiah Rogers. And there's just one thing, you look at 5 tackles, all that, but he just finds a knack for finding the football. And Isaiah Rogers is a guy that it's very, very hard to keep him off the field. And we saw that on Thursday. And then Kenny Moore is probably the best nickel in the game, and when he is out there, he can lock down anybody who he's squared against. And it's funny because Kenny Moore stands every bit of 5'8". You know, he's a small guy. He's got good length, but he is one of those guys. He plays so much bigger than what you see, and he is just about as good of a corner as you'll find in this league.
All right. I want to talk now about someone that has been wreaking havoc on quarterbacks for quite a while now, and that's Yannick Ngakoue. He had a 0.5 sack in the game against Denver. Just give me your thoughts on his play against the Broncos.
Yeah, so Yannick Ngakoue is one of those guys that everybody knows. When you look at the sexy category on the defensive side of the ball, it's all about what you can do getting after the passer, and Yannick Ngakoue has been a guy who has shown throughout his career he's had at least 8.5 sacks in every year. And it looks like he's on his way to getting that this year. He has had, you know, a bit of a slower start to what Colts fans were anticipating. But if you go back to the game against the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, he was able to get his 1st sack in that game. And then the game against Russell Wilson, he kind of came out to play as well in that game. So it's one of those things that he's definitely been there in the big moments. And we saw that again on Thursday, another 0.5 sack. He had a tackle for loss. That's one of the things that Yannick Ngakoue, he is able to put his mark on games when it's pivotal, and those moments, they both came on 3rd downs, and that is so key because he was able to get the offense off the field and get the Colts offense back on. So that is one of the things about Yannick. It's not sacks that come on 1st down that are a 2-yard loss and they end up converting. It's in the big plays when you need a stop. Yannick Ngakoue, his number's been called.
All right, and I want to talk now about 2 defensive backs that came up huge in this game, Stephon Gilmore and Rodney Thomas. Rodney came up big with an interception just before the end of regulation. And, of course, Stephon got an interception as well and was responsible for the stop to end the overtime period, giving the Colts the victory. Rodney is on the come up, and we know about Stephon's pedigree, winning several Super Bowls with the New England Patriots and being a Defensive Player of the Year. Give me your thoughts on Stephon and Rodney in this game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Stephon Gilmore is one of those guys. He's as advertised. You want to pay the top-tier corner to make plays when it matters, and he was able to have the interception late in the game that set the Colts up for another offensive drive, and then final play of the game, they try to dial up their number one receiver, and the Colts' number one corner steps in with a big pass defense to seal the game. That is what Stephon Gilmore is. That's what he's been throughout his career. There were, you know, it was interesting seeing, you know, what you were expecting for him this year. He's coming off a couple years where he's had, you know, some injury concerns. But as you mentioned, he was the defensive player of the year in 2019. So just a couple years removed. And he looks healthy. He's played every snap. He looks like a guy that looks well on his way to be in that Pro Bowl consideration, top-tier corner in the league. Stephon Gilmore has continued to do that. And then you mentioned Rodney Thomas. Rodney Thomas might be one of the best-kept secrets that people maybe aren't talking about on a national level, because Rodney Thomas was a seventh-round pick out of Yale this year, a guy who played corner, was making the transition into safety, hadn't played too much of that, and the Colts actually traded up to get Nick Cross in the third round, who was a safety, who played as a rookie, or in his first professional game, started. He's kind of dwindled his playing time, and the guy that slid in has been Rodney Thomas, and he has been just as solid as you can find. I mean, he had a pick in the game on Thursday and play where Russell Wilson threw one up deep, and Rodney Thomas got tripped up by the back judge, and I'm not too certain that if he wouldn't have been tripped up with the official, he wouldn't have had a chance to get a second interception in that game. So Rodney Thomas has played very, very well. There were very low expectations. Seventh-round pick, you know, you're just lucky to make the team in some instances. And Yale, not necessarily known as a powerhouse football program. So Rodney Thomas has definitely opened some eyeballs here in Indianapolis. And he's played about as well as you could in his, you know, his very minimal games to this point. And you Colts are waiting for Julian Blackman to get back off injury. But right now, the way that he and Roddy McLeod are playing on that back end, you're definitely feeling very, very good about what you have in the secondary.
Absolutely. And I know the Colts have felt very good about what they have on the defensive line since DeForest Buckner arrived from San Francisco in the trade. And he wreaked havoc on Russell Wilson in the game against the Broncos. He had two sacks. Give me your thoughts on DeForest and his play.
Yeah, no, DeForest, he was due. It was one of those things. The first couple weeks, he was dealing with a couple injuries. It was a back injury, and then he had an elbow. And the elbow injury he still has, and he's wearing a giant people are calling it the Barry Bonds, what Barry Bonds used to wear when he was hitting, kind of a big elbow brace. But I think from him it was finally getting comfortable with the injury front and being able to fight through it, and we saw it come to fruition on Thursday. He hadn't had a sack leading up to that game, but he was able to make his mark on the game, a couple sacks. And it's so key having that interior pass rush. I mean, that has been – you know, one of the things we've started to see over the last handful of years with guys like Aaron Donald and Chris Jones, having the interior pass rush, it makes it so difficult on quarterbacks because they wanted to step up in the pocket to get away from those edge rushers. So with DeForest Buckner showing that, you know, he's still got a lot left in the tank, and I'm sure for him it was a good kickstart to the rest of the season. So getting a couple sacks, especially on a guy who he used to see during his Seattle days when he was with the 49ers, of course, and Russell Wilson, I'm sure taking him to the ground felt pretty good twice.
Indeed it did. And I want to get back to the offensive side for a moment. The offensive line has had their struggles so far in this early part of the NFL season. Ryan Kelly, Quentin Nelson, also Danny Pinter, and Will Fries and Dennis Kelly, just to name a few that make up that offensive line. What has been the problem, in your opinion, Casey, and on how the offensive line and what's gone wrong so far this year?
You know, that's a great question. We've been trying to figure that out for a handful of weeks. We've seen a lot of shuffling, which, you know, I mean, in the way the offensive line is, you want cohesion. You want to have the same guys out there week in, week out, because it builds that continuity and everybody's on the same page. Well, last week we saw a wholesale change with, you know, it was three different offensive linemen starting on Thursday. Bernard Raimann made his debut, his starting debut at left tackle. That moved Matt Pryor over to right tackle, and it shuffled Braden Smith into right. But when you look at the overall, you know, the play of what we saw on Thursday, there was still a handful of question marks. You mentioned guys like Danny Pinter. He slid in at center because Ryan Kelly was injured, so we're not sure where Ryan Kelly is on his injury front. Will Fries has played some this year. We haven't seen Dennis Kelly just yet because he's been working back through a knee injury. But he's also a name that we've been hearing the last couple of weeks that he's starting to get healthy. So I think right now it's hard to pinpoint the one issue that is this offensive line has struggled with, but it has been definitely an eye-opening thing because this team, they were an offensive line that a couple years ago was number one with just 18 sacks allowed all year, and here they are here in 2022. Matt Ryan's been sacked 21 times. It's tied for last in the league. So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of, you know, trying to figure out how to get this squad right. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, it's hard because you only have so many positions, you know, so as far as depth goes. So you've got your core guys. They're trying to shuffle them in and see where the right fit is for all these guys. So it's definitely a work in progress. I'm sure something you don't want to be seeing here as we head into week six of the NFL season, still trying to figure out what your best five combination is, but it's definitely a big area that they're trying to shore up. And it's hard because offensive line play in here in Indianapolis has been really, really good the last handful of years. I mean, Braden Smith, Ryan Kelly, Quentin Nelson, they're all guys who have been Pro Bowlers, you know, over the last just couple years. So it's really something that we're all scratching our head and going, what did we miss? What has happened with this group? They're still working through it, and we'll see what happens on Sunday if they stick with what we saw last Thursday or if they make another change and we still try to see if this carousel can kind of find its footing and go on with five moving forward.
I want to stay just with the offensive line for a moment. The Colts had a different quarterback last year with Carson Wentz, and we know Carson has athletic ability and has a strong arm, whereas Matt Ryan is more of your classic NFL typical pocket passer. Do you think the offensive line is still trying to find their groove in terms of finding a way to adapt to Matt's playing style? Or are they still used to having to kind of be upright, whereas they were protecting Carson? Do you think they've had to adjust to those quarterbacks' playing style going from Carson to Matt? Or do you think it's just, like you said, it's just they're still trying to find that cohesive unit?
No, I think that's a great point. I think it is one thing that you can look at. It's, you know, Carson Wentz did extend plays with his athletic ability, and there's a lot to be said that is a different style. So I think that's definitely part of it. I think it's kind of twofold, though, and I think it's also you're still trying to find the best five guys for that cohesion. I think it all starts on the interior of the line, if you ask me. I think there has been a little bit of a learning curve from Ryan Kelly to Matt Ryan. So having that center quarterback combination, I think that is very pivotal if they can figure that out, you know, and just a little bit. I'm not sure. I'm not saying it's not working, but I think there are still some hiccups that are happening there. So I think if they can shore up that part, and then they have had a handful of guys play at right guard. We know what Quentin Nelson is. We know Quentin Nelson is going to be on the left side. You don't have to worry about that. But if they can find that right guard, I think if you get that three playing at the level that they should be playing at, I think it might make the entire offensive line better. It might give Matt Ryan a little bit more time. But I also think that you have to kind of look at it the way that it is and start maybe having a little bit more quicker passes, quicker routes for Ryan right now because, as we've talked about, the offensive line has definitely struggled a little bit to this point. So trying to get the ball out a little quicker, you know, that's the way that we saw Phillip Rivers 2 years ago. He had the ball out real fast. That was a year they led the NFL with the fewest sacks allowed. So if you kind of go back to maybe what you did a couple years ago with Phillip, I think Matt Ryan is a little bit more mobile, a little bit more athleticism than what you saw out of Phillip Rivers. I also do think Matt Ryan's arm is a little better than what Phillip was at the time that he was here. So it's not an easy comparison, but I think there are some similarities to what Frank Reich and this offense did with Phillip Rivers in 19 that this team can try to do here in 2022 that might help speed everything up. It might also give the offensive line a little bit more confidence. It might give Matt Ryan some more confidence. And this wide receiver group, they're looking for confidence. Tight ends, everybody wants to feel like you're a big part of everything. And if you're catching passes and you're moving the football, it builds some momentum. It builds confidence. And I think that's the key. If they can start getting into a little bit more rhythm, you might see this offense start to uptick a little bit.
All right. And you mentioned his name, Matt Ryan. Let's talk about him. He completed 26 out of 41 passes for 251 yards and two interceptions. Give me your thoughts on Matt and his performance in this game.
Yeah, so Matt Ryan, he's been up and down. There's no denying that. He's had his struggles. I mean, it wasn't an offensive clinic that we saw on Thursday, that's for sure. But the one thing that we did see, that we've continued to see through Matt Ryan's career, it's almost like when the fourth quarter gets there, it's a different guy. It's a different guy under center. And when he has the football and he has to go down and score, he's able to facilitate. He's able to get the offense to do that, and we saw that again. He had a game tying drive before overtime that he was able to get the offense out to get in position for a field goal that ultimately was the game winner. So another game-winning drive for Matt Ryan. It puts him sixth all-time in NFL history, past Brett Favre for the most on that. So, I mean, he's a guy. It's documented. We know what you have when it's in crunch time. He is a gamer. He's got that clutch trait that everybody wants. Now, the biggest thing is trying to hone in on the first three quarters, because we had two interceptions. He also fumbled the football twice. Both of those were recovered by the Colts. But right now, I mean, he's fumbled the football at an alarming rate. I mean, he's on path to actually set an NFL record for most fumbles by a quarterback. So that is an alarming number that they're trying to figure out. I think it all goes hand in hand. The struggles we've seen on the offensive line, if they can get all of that worked out, I think the product you're going to see of Matt Ryan is going to be a little bit more what we're seeing late in the games when, you know, all the stacks are against him and he's able to step up. I want to say that is the Matt Ryan we've all been waiting to see. We're just hoping that as we move forward, we can get a little bit more cohesion in the offense and he can really start to hit his stride in those first three quarters instead of just the fourth and the overtimes.
I want to stay just with Matt for a moment. I know this is still a long season, but you said, Casey, he's been up and down so far. When do you think we're going to see Matty Ice? When do you think we're going to see Matt Ryan in MVP form? Do you think it all begins and ends with how well the offensive line plays?
I think that's a big part of it. I think part of it is him, though. I think you can't just say that the struggles have been on everybody else. I think you have to hold him accountable for the issues that we've seen. The thing that I know, this is, you know, it's always glass half full. I go back to what we saw during OTAs and then what we saw throughout the month of August at training camp. Matt Ryan looked every bit of a guy who had plenty left in the tank, guy who was, I honestly, early in the, you know, during training camp, someone asked me what I felt, and I felt like, honestly, this seems very reminiscent of what the Rams did with Matthew Stafford. I thought Matthew Stafford looked great last year, led the Rams to a Super Bowl, and honestly, I thought Matt Ryan looked that good that, hey, this is a guy that can elevate everybody on his team and make them play at a higher level and get to ultimately where you want to go. And I thought, especially in the AFC South, where it was a wide-open division, still is. I mean, we're just 5 weeks in. There's a lot that can still happen. And I thought the Colts could take care of the division that I felt was regressing with the Titans trading A.J. Brown, the Jags and the Texans. You know, they're young. They're trying to establish themselves. But, you know, you don't really know what you have in those two teams yet. So I thought Matt Ryan was going to be that guy to kind of take this team and do what Matthew Stafford did with the Rams. And like I said, there's only 5 weeks in. He could have a great rest of the season, and you look back and say, what a great year Matt Ryan had. I think that's still there. I think there's still a lot that Matt can prove, and Matty Ice can be in full effect. I think we're all just waiting. We're on the edge of our seat because there are instances where you go, wow, he's starting to heat up, he's looking good, and then you have a fumble. You have an interception, and it's almost like you take a step back. So I think we're all waiting to see it all come to fruition. But I will say that part of it, I think, is offensive line, but I do think part of it is definitely on him. It's a mental game, and I think we're going to start to see it kind of hit that stride and take that curve, because he's been doing this for so long, and the track record is so good. I think at some point, water finds its level, and I think we'll start seeing the Matt Ryan that everybody has seen throughout his career.
I want to ask you, how has he adjusted to Indianapolis from being in Atlanta? Has the adjustment been smooth in terms of a personal standpoint, in terms of him and his family being comfortable?
Right. No, from all indications, that is what we have heard. He's a very family oriented guy. And, you know, I'll be very, you know, very honest with you. When the first time I met Matt Ryan, I looked to the guys that was, I was sitting next to, and I said, all right, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I get it. This guy is an impressive human being. And he related Indianapolis a lot to Atlanta. He said that, you know, that Southern hospitality, a lot of people like to say there's a Hoosier hospitality in Indiana. And he said he felt that. He really feels not quite at home just yet, because when you spend 15 years in a city and then you move, it's hard to say that the new place is home. So I think they're still trying to get acquainted and adjusted to it. But I think for the most part, it's been a pretty smooth transition. I know that this fan base really circled behind him. They were all in. They really, really were excited about the addition of Matt Ryan. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't any red flags. It was a guy that, from everybody's accounts, everybody thought he was a great leader, a great teammate, and a great quarterback, and he's been a very great community guy. He loves it here from all accounts. So I would say the transition's been pretty good. I'm sure it would look a lot better if the Colts were out there at 5-0 and all of that. But I think it's something that it's definitely a work in progress. But right now I think all signs are pointing to everything has been pretty solid from his standpoint.
All right. I want to move along now to head coach Frank Reich, and currently this is his fifth season at the helm of the head coach of the Colts. Well, the Colts record currently stands at 2-2-1. How would you rate his coaching so far in this season?
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at the record, it all falls on the head coach. That is, you know, that's the world we live in with sports. You know how it goes. I mean, if you're not winning, it's typically the guy at the top, he's the one that gets all the blame, and he gets little success when it's successful. You know, everybody else gets the praise and he doesn't get it. So I think right now there have been a handful of struggles, but it's hard to really, in my eyes, it's really hard to blame the coaching, because there's been a handful of just unforeseen mistakes that you just don't expect and you don't typically see out of this Colts team under Frank Reich. We have seen the fumbles at an alarming rate, and this is something that this team has always been so good at. They rarely cough up the football, and they have coughed up the football a lot. We're seeing just not necessarily a ton of penalties, but the penalties are coming in really pivotal moments. A lot of third downs, you know, where you're behind, you know, the opposing team is behind the sticks, and then a third down penalty, it just crushes you, adds a, you know, another drive and all that. So it's hard. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's on the coaching. There's been a handful of times where, you know, Frank Reich, he's aggressive. So there's been a handful of fourth down calls throughout his career and definitely through this season that are head scratchers, but that's just kind of come to the territory. He's all about analytics and he's aggressive. So it's kind of you get what you get with Frank Reich. I don't know if necessarily I'm looking at this 2-2-1 record and saying, well, if it wasn't Frank Reich, somebody else would have this team at X. I think this team is performing right where they are based on the play on the field. I don't think it has too much to do with the coaching that we have seen. Frank Reich is a player's coach. These guys, they would run through the wall for Frank. So I'm not at all worried about, you know, that he's not getting the guys to perform to the level that they wanted to. I just think right now they're just having, you know, they always talk about the football bounces weird because it's not a perfectly circle ball. Right now the ball's just bouncing the other way, and I'm just waiting for it to kind of bounce the right way for the Colts, because I think when it does, Frank Reich is a guy that he is very well thought of throughout the league as one of the best play callers in the NFL. And I think that is still the case. I think once he gets the ball in better situations for him, you'll start to see that excel, and I think you'll start to see this team really kind of take another step.
The NFL is all about quarterback and coach relationships. We're seeing it in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. We're seeing it in Buffalo with Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, just to name a few. I know that Frank Reich had a relationship with Carson Wentz when they were together in Philadelphia, Reich being the offensive coordinator. What's the relationship like currently with Coach Reich and Matt Ryan?
No, it's a really good one. And the thing that it's been a lot from what Matt has talked about, which is interesting. For Matt Ryan, this is the first time that his head coach has been a former quarterback. So their minds work very similar. And I think on that, And also Marcus Brady, who is the Colts offensive coordinator, he's a former quarterback. So they've got a lot of quarterback minds within the offensive framework. And I think for that, it's been a great transition for Matt to Frank, because they both, not only are they both about the same height, they're both about 6'4", so they both see eye to eye, but they also see the game the same way. So I really think that that has been maybe the biggest step in the positive way for this relationship. And it's one of the things that Matt Ryan talked about when, essentially, when Atlanta flirted with the option of Deshaun Watson in Atlanta, it kind of opened the door for Matt Ryan to look elsewhere. And he mentioned that he had a conversation with Frank Reich, Marcus Brady, talking just about the offense here in Indianapolis. And he said that they talked for 2 hours, and he was, you know, he was very comfortable in Atlanta. But after the conversation, he said he looked over at his wife and she goes, "We're moving, aren't we?" And it was like he just knew there was something there that he was not necessarily he knew he was missing, but that he was missing. So I think the relationship between Frank Reich and Matt Ryan is very, very strong. Now, I don't know if you can compare them between Frank's and Carson's, because, you know, Frank was with Carson for a couple years. He was one of the guys that went and scouted him at his pro day, and they've had a lot of, you know, very personal relationships between he and Carson Wentz. But right now, the professional relationship between Matt Ryan and Frank Reich is definitely very high.
All right, and let's now move along now to the Week 6 matchup with the Indianapolis Colts going up against their division rival in the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Casey, let's start off with the Colts defense. They're going to be going up against a quarterback who is expected to light the NFL up for the next decade or so, and that's Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor's played pretty well so far in this early part of the NFL season. What do you think are going to be the keys to victory for the Colts defense to stop Trevor and the Jaguar offense?
Oh, that's a really good question, because Trevor Lawrence has looked really good. And if you look at his games against the Colts, he's looked – I mean, he has really excelled in his games against the Colts. I mean, he's completing passes almost at 75%. He's, you know, his quarterback rating is so high compared to where he is against everybody else. So he's kind of had the Colts number in his early career here. And you're right. He has looked very, very good this year. I think the additions that Jacksonville made were great for his skill set. You know, it's nothing flashy. It's get playmakers the football in their hands and let them do the work. And that's what we saw in that Week 2 matchup. The Colts went down to Jacksonville, a place where it's been well documented. They have not won in Jacksonville since 2014, and that continued this year. They lost 24-0. They were shut out, and it was Trevor Lawrence's show. I mean, he looked great in that Week 2 matchup. Now, what I always like to say when you're taking on a team twice in a year, that second game, both teams are going in completely different directions of what they were before. The Colts were coming off a really embarrassing tie against Houston. The Jags lost their Week 1 opener, so there was, you know, kind of an influx of both. They were both kind of eager to get out there, and Jacksonville just looked like a team that wanted it more in Week 2. The way it sits here for Week 6, Jacksonville, they've lost two in a row, and they've also turned the ball over 7 times in the last 2 games. For the Colts, their offense hasn't been great, but their defense has been playing very, very well. So I think right now, the way it looks as far as teams are trending, the Colts defense is looking like they're trending in the right direction, taking on Trevor Lawrence. But it is one of those things you talk about. It's a division rival. Jacksonville always gets up to play against the Colts, and Jacksonville is still very much inside this divisional race. I know we're only 5 weeks in. For the last handful of years, you know, Week 5, Jacksonville might have already been 0-5 and been done. So this is a little bit of different waters that they're treading in here this year in 2022. And Trevor Lawrence, he's the guy that he has a lot of weapons at his disposal, and also he offers a lot of weapons. He's got a good arm. He's also got the ability to be mobile and get outside the pocket and do things. He's not quite Josh Allen, but he's still an athletic quarterback. So there's a lot of things that give you a little bit of pause when you're trying to prepare for this team. So this Colts defense, they've got a pretty good matchup ahead of them on Sunday, but I know that, you know, they're hungry. They lost 24-0. They were embarrassed down in Jacksonville. This time they get them at their own house and at Lucas Oil Stadium here in Indianapolis. And I know they're kind of licking their chops, ready to kind of show them that Week 2, that wasn't the defense they wanted to put out on the field. And same with the offense. They're looking to really kickstart things. So it's going to be a good matchup. I'm really excited to see what Trevor Lawrence looks like here again in Week 6. And I'm excited to see what, you know, this Gus Bradley defense with guys like Yannick Ngakoue, Stephon Gilmore, DeForest Buckner, Kenny Moore. I want to see what they look like in the second matchup against Trevor Lawrence.
All right, let's move over to the other side of the ball. The Colts offense, Matt Ryan, and we talked about the other offensive players on that squad with the likes of Michael Pittman Jr., also Alec Pierce and Deion Jackson. What do you think are going to be the keys to victory for the Colts offense to get points against the Jaguars defense?
Yeah, that's a good one because the Jaguars defense is very, very refined. I mean, Josh Allen is a force on the edge. And he has proven that in his games against the Colts. It's almost like these are the games that, for him, it means a little bit more. I'm not sure why he takes it out on the Colts, but he seems to really get up for the games against the Colts. We've seen, you know, Trayvon Walker, the first overall pick, he's looked pretty good. In the first matchup, Devin Lloyd, their other first-round pick, the linebacker, he had probably the best game that we have seen he's had through 5 weeks. So it's one of those things that defensive front for Jacksonville is very stout. We'll be anxious to see what happens with Jonathan Taylor. He missed last week with the ankle injury. Not sure, you know, how he's trending. We'll find that out later on Wednesday. But, you know, that's a big thing. I think if the Colts can get Jonathan Taylor back, that definitely opens up the passing game more. But we did see, as we mentioned earlier, you know, Phillip Lindsay and Deion Jackson looked very good on Thursday Night Football in Denver. So, you know, hopefully that is still enough of a rushing threat that Jacksonville can't just, you know, pin their ears back and get after Matt Ryan. But I also think we talk back to the Week 2 matchup. The Colts went into that game without Michael Pittman and without Alec Pierce. So for the Colts, their two best weapons as far as, you know, as receivers go on the outside, they've got them healthy for this game. So that is definitely something that's going to be a change from that first matchup. And, you know, that's got to bode well for the Colts because, you know, frankly, Jacksonville hasn't seen either of those guys in the makeup of the football this year. So that is one thing for the Colts. They have an advantage. And if Jonathan Taylor can get back to healthy, that's also another advantage. We'll just have to see how well the offensive line plays. It's kind of been the MO of this team the last handful of weeks is how well is your offensive line playing? But because a lot of people have said that however the offensive line plays, that's how well the team is going to play. So if the offensive line can play better, I think this team's going to have definitely a better output from an offensive standpoint than what we saw in week two. But I think the key is to just convert third downs. That is so important, and that is one thing this team has struggled with early, and they really struggled in week two. I want to say they only converted 2 third downs in that week two game. So that is definitely a big point of emphasis for this team as they prepare for the Jags here in Indianapolis.
And you heard it from him. He is Casey Vallier. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Casey, thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Just tell everybody where they can find you on social media as well as the Indianapolis Colts and any websites. Let them know that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, once again, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Anytime you need to join, you need a guest, I'm always willing and able to happy to join you for sure. You can find me. I'm at C Vallier Colts on Twitter. That is C-V-A-L-L-I-E-R Colts on Twitter. And then you can find me all over the Colts.com. We have a weekly podcast we do. We do a Behind Enemy Lines, a Know Your Foe, if you will, every week. You can find all of that on the Colts Audio Network. We've got podcast, radio shows, press conferences, all of that stuff right there at Colts.com, or you can download the Colts mobile app.
Before I let you go, Casey, I wanted to ask you, I know tailgating and just food as a whole is a part of this event experience, and the NFL is no exception to the rule. So when you do have time to go to Colts games, what are some of the foods that you enjoy eating at a Colts game?
Oh, I love this. Okay, so I'm a sucker for, you know, I'm not probably not as versed as some people when it comes to food, but I am like a sucker for like a walking taco or a loaded nacho. Like for me, there's nothing better than you got the chili, you got the cheese. It's a little messy, but I'm all for that. And you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, a nice ice cold beer watching a game, I can't complain with those. So both of those are probably right where I am going whenever I'm hitting up, you know, the concession stand at a football game for sure.
Can you explain to the listeners what consists of a walking taco and how is it prepared?
Yeah, so a walking taco for me, which this is what it was growing up. I think it's changed throughout time, but essentially it's you got a bag of Fritos, and inside the bag of Fritos you put everything you would put in a typical taco. So you've got your meat, you've got your lettuce, you've got your sour cream, you got your tomatoes, you got your cheese. I throw some hot sauce in there. You kind of crinkle it all up. You get a fork and you just there's nothing better than a walking taco. I will go to the grave talking about walking tacos. That's for sure.
Oh, wow, awesome! And can you explain to the listeners what's involved in a loaded nachos and how it's prepared, or how do you like it served?
Yeah, so my loaded nacho, it's very similar to the walking taco, only instead of the Fritos, it's just the tortilla chip. So I'm not a big red meat guy, so I really like turkey meat. You get turkey meat, you put some of that with some, you know, you might even get, you know, some sort of salsa and some, you know, some nacho cheese with some meat and throw all that on there, some guacamole, some sour cream. That stuff, wow, you're making me hungry now. That's what you're doing.
Both the walking taco and the loaded nachos sound delicious. And one more time, Casey, tell everybody where they can find you on social media as well as the Indianapolis Colts and the website.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's C Vallier Colts, and that is CVALLIER Colts, and that's on Twitter. And then you can find all of the stuff that we do on Colts.com, the Colts mobile app. We've got the Colts audio network that's involved there, and everything that we do as far as radio shows, press conferences, podcasts, all that stuff, that can be found on the Colts audio network on the Colts mobile app or Colts.com.
Awesome. And you heard it from him. He is Casey Vallier. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts radio network. Casey, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. If ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. And anytime, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Play action. Time. Wide open inside the 30 goes Jerry Jeudy. Gilmore's on Sutton this time. Keep it on the ground and getting spilled.
Over a lot of people thought he should roll out.
Yeah.
You know what happened. Fourth and one. Surveys, good protection, slides, fires, broken up in the end zone. Gilmore on Sutton. So the defensive player of the year a couple of years back, and somehow, someway, the Indianapolis Colts, who took their first lead of the game on that field goal, pull out a 12-9 victory.
Everyone deserves to feel connected. That's why Cox has high-speed internet to fit any budget. For real. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply.
MFS Investment Management. Our active 360 approach to fixed income goes beyond analyzing financials. We combine active security selection and risk management, striving to make the most of complex bond markets. MFS.com/active360.
Put industry leading, difference making, and tomorrow shaping on your to-do list. Explore Deloitte Technology Careers at deloitte.com/tech careers and engineer your future at Deloitte.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Come here.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.
Everyone deserves to feel connected. That's why Cox has high-speed internet to fit any budget. For real. Learn more at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC. Other restrictions apply.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Come here.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.
MFS Investment Management. Our active 360 approach to fixed income goes beyond analyzing financials. We combine active security selection and risk management, striving to make the most of complex bond markets. MFS.com/active360.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Casey Vallier, the coordinator of radio production and in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Again, a big special thank you to Casey for taking time out of his busy schedule to be on the program. And until next time, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.
Buy one, get one for $1. Deal. It's buy one, get one for $1 at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
Get a delicious McDouble, tasty small fries, savory four-piece chicken McNuggets, flavorful McChicken, or hot and spicy McChicken. Buy one, get one for $1. You can get two of the same item or mix and match them. Any way you choose, you can't lose. Only at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary. Valid for product of equal or lesser value. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more. Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more. Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.